afternoon, everybody. Welcome into another Woods and Water SC Saturday.
Yeah, very good.
Another one. Hope everybody had a great Memorial Day weekend. Hope everybody was safe.
There were some boating accidents over the Memorial Day weekend that really... Gosh, you got to be careful out there, folks. Mm-hmm. Head on a swivel. It's almost got to be more alert boating than you do driving.
Yep.
Because there's no yellow lines and white lines on a lake.
And no brakes.
Yep. I don't know. Brakes. You talk
about
that.
No brakes.
All right, I'll give you that.
There's no brakes.
But yeah, welcome in. And like I said, when you're out there on the water, gosh, just be careful. I think there were, one collision down in Georgia, one in South Carolina, resulting in fatalities.
Yep.
17-year-old boy got killed, and then I think four members of a family in Georgia head-on collision in a river down there near Savannah. So just be careful. Don't be scared to get out on the water, but, man, when you're out there, just be careful.
And I hope everybody's boat checks went well.
Yeah.
Y'all did have them. Hope everybody cooperated and made all of the officers' lives easier.
Yeah, that's right.
And hope everybody was prepared.
Yep.
Hope you went out and day before you went out to the lake, you made sure your batteries were charged, made sure you had the right... Dad, I'm calling you out on that one.
Yeah, I gotta get that battery, don't I?
Hope everybody's life jackets fit right. Hope everybody's tires were pumped up enough.
Yep.
Just hope you had a great weekend and enjoyed it.
Because there's a lot more of those lake weekends coming up.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
I'm so excited. Yep.
Welcome in. It's another good one. Got Hunter Bridges on with us this show. He is a new, what would you call him? Small game biologist. I hate to say that, but he's a biologist with Quail Forever here in South Carolina. One of their farm bill biologists to kind of help landowners and all navigate that part of it. But he's a small game guy, and we're going to talk a lot about quail and habitat. And
definitely not something I understand, so this will be fun.
And it's, look, you can have backyard habitat. When we talk about habitat, quail habitat,
it
doesn't have to be 40-acre pasture or stuff like that. You can have 5-acre quail habitat do it really well.
We have a couple acre groundhog habitat. So.
Yeah, right now. Yeah, we do. Chunkers has three little ones now.
They're precious.
They are cute. They don't run very fast either.
No, they don't.
It's struggling to keep up.
It's a wide load.
So we do have a couple of things on the calendar this week.
Surprisingly.
Brought to you by Capital City.
Lake Murray Country.
Yep. I guess you can go first.
I
have two.
So the South Carolina Barbecue Association is putting on a Mid-State Quail and Dove Barbecue Cook-Off. It's going to be June 11th at Little Mountain Park. There's going to be live music, cornhole, auctions, kids events, all sorts of stuff. It's a $200 entry fee if you want to be in the cook-off. It's $10 per person to go sample from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. There's first, second, third, fourth, and people's champ trophies. Go check that out.
Everybody loves barbecue.
Yep.
It's another of the 2022 Bamberg County South Fork and Edisto River Canoe Kayak Trips. They run April through October. This one is Saturday, June the 11th. It'll launch at 9 a.m. at Nest Landing. They have some shuttles available. Donations are accepted for the shuttle. And you need to probably reserve. I don't see it here. Register. You need to register. So bring your own boat and gear. A life jacket and whistle are required by law. To rent a boat and gear, contact Cape Kayak Company. Camping and cabins available at the Edisto Birdhouse Refuge or Barnwell State Park near Blackville. For additional information and to register, call or text Jerry Bell at 803-300-1972, lgbell@mindspring.com, and this is all sponsored by the First Baptist Church of Denmark.
Denmark.
Yeah, North Denmark. We got some Norways down that way, too.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
The Outdoor Dream Foundation is putting on their 5th annual Benefit Bass Tournament. It's going to be Saturday, June 11th at Lake Greenwood State Park. Safe flight to 3 p.m. It's going to be $1,500 for first place. I'm trying to see. All state and local rules apply. So to go figure out all of their tournament regulations and everything, you can go to the Outdoor Dream Foundation or outdoordream.org. There's going to be raffle tickets. There's food at the weigh-ins. And you can also go to that website to register.
Time again for the 2022 Ag and Art Tour. Everybody's going, scratching their head, Ag and Art. Okay, so agriculture and art combined into one. What happens is a free self-guided tour of farms and markets featuring local artisans at every stop. During the tour, visitors have the opportunity to see firsthand where their food comes from, watch artists in action, and purchase their works, enjoy the melodies of local musicians, and learn more about rural life, which I think is a big disconnect in today's society. Yeah. You know, that chicken doesn't show up at Bilo wrapped.
No.
It's grown somewhere. It's, you know, and then those beans are grown somewhere, and those cows come from somewhere, and
that,
this is...
That reminds me of that yes. I think it was a Twitter post a couple of years ago.
You're interrupting me.
Viral. Well, I got to say this before I forget about it. It was a Twitter post, and it was a lady that was like, who needs farms? We have grocery stores.
I was yeah.
like, okay.
So anyway, it's an opportunity for you to connect at the local level with some of the certified South Carolina growers, the South Carolina Agritourism. So I want to highlight June the 11th and 12th. It is going to be in Lake Murray Country. So Lexington, Newberry, and Richland counties. There's a map. If you go to agandarttour.com, you can see the tour map and all that. So if you go to like Lexington County, and you click on a dot, Hollow Creek Distillery. Okay. That's part of it. Fire Barrel Farm, Richland County, Fable Farms. Let's see. Pinewood Lake Park is going to have something. Fox Hideaway Farm. And you go and you connect. I mean, it's really cool. But if you go to each individual county, it'll show you who's available. And there's farms. Let's see. Yeah, Locklear Farms. And it gives LocklearFarmSupply.com. So you can look and see what that is. If that's in Lexington County. If you go to Newberry. Oh, come on. Quit disappearing on me. Newberry County. Okay, so there's Newberry, and here's the farms involved. So you can go to Highbrow Beef Company. What is that one? Oh, that's the same one. Whoopsie. Lever Farms in Pomeria. It looks like they grow strawberries. So it's just an opportunity to get back to kind of our roots here in the United States as ag-based. South Carolina's an ag-based state for the most part. But the agandarttour.com is where you want to go, and go enjoy, because a lot of those places have some really good stuff to snack on while you're there.
We are very much a food kind of people.
We're foodie people. Okay, do you want to go through that right quick?
No, we'll save it.
You don't have time for it.
We'll save it till
next time. We'll save it next time. It's the problem. You start judging how long your mouth is going to wank and talk and all.
And ours does a lot.
Yeah, we can't get through things in a hurry. But anyway, what are you pointing at? You're pointing at, you're waving your hand around pointing at something. Anyway, Hunter Bridges, Quail Forever here in South Carolina is going to join us, and we're going to have a good time talking
get
about
it. Get your notepad and pen.
Yeah,
out,
and just remember, when you manage for small game, you manage for all game. Hang on, we'll be back. More Woods and Water, South Carolina, inside the break. I dare you to say it.
You know, I wasn't going to say anything, But the only comment I was going to make was this is like a... That automatically took me to, like, the movie we just watched.
Oh, because, Top Gun, Maverick.
Yep. I don't know why, but it just did.
Good movie.
It was good. I like the first one better.
It was not as good as about, you know, the first... you know, the first one was just...
It was
the first one.
Its own.
36 years ago. Tom Cruise, would you stop that? Tom Cruise has aged very well, by the way. I'm sure a lot of people have seen Top Gun Maverick now, but he does a little intro right at the beginning, and the boy looks good. And that is his P-51 Mustang.
I'm jealous.
In the movie.
I'm going to go buy it from him.
Holy smoke. Oh, and there's a really cool clip. I don't know who that guy was. Durbin, what's the guy, the comedian or whatever, that Tom Cruise invites out to go.
Gosh.
I can't remember.
James.
Well, Corbin.
Yeah, James Corden.
You need to look it up. It's a YouTube video that Tom Cruise gets this guy to come out, and the looks on this guy's face when Tom says we're going flying and some of this other stuff is just priceless, folks.
Well,
just priceless.
I mean, to see a fat British guy stuffed in a P-51 Mustang for the first time.
And he tries to run for Tom. Tom goes, where are you going? We're in the middle of the desert, you know? Anyway, and we just wasted 2 minutes of our guest time. Taylor, what's wrong with you?
Ow.
We welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. You know, we like to talk here, and it's always neat to have a new voice on the show, and that's what we've got today. We've got Hunter Bridges, who is with Quail Forever in South Carolina. He's our new farm bill biologist in Abbeville, McCormick, Greenwood, Saluda, and Edgefield counties. And he's working out of NRCS offices and management plans and farm bill enrollments and programs and all. And Hunter, it is it's been fun talking to you leading up to this, and we're going to have a good time on the show. And thanks for taking time to be on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Absolutely, Roger. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, and I look forward to this discussion. Yeah,
absolutely. Hey, have you seen Top Gun Maverick yet?
I was gonna comment on that. I haven't. I'm a little bit reluctant because I'm a big fan of the first one.
Yeah.
But after your report, I may have to give it a try.
It's good. The flying is incredible, which you knew it was
from the mid-80s, I guess.
Yeah. You know, there's some cheesy parts, I guess you'd want to say, kind of predictable, not cheesy. Yeah. Predictable parts and all, but overall, a really good movie. And
it's not one that'll ruin the first one. We'll just put it that way. Like it didn't.
They'll never top the first one.
But no.
The first one was not in this new one. Is that right?
No.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Oh.
Anyway, Bob Whitequill.
Yes, Bob Whitequill. Enough of the movie reviews. I kind of gave you a little bit of an introduction, but take a couple minutes and talk about your background, how you came to be here with Quail and Lemon in South Carolina. Quail and Lemon. See, I'm dropping back to here like the 1980s.
Forever.
It's Quail Forever. Quail and Lemon is gone. But, give us a rundown on yourself.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you grew up here in South Carolina, and like you and most of your listeners, grew up hunting and fishing and that sort of thing, all over the state, and ended up getting a degree in wildlife and fisheries biology from Clemson University.
Okay.
Back in 2009. Done various things since then, including a lot of wildlife photography, some wildlife damage management, and that sort of thing, and then finally got involved with my local chapter. Well, it really didn't exist at the time. Got involved. starting the local chapter of Quail Forever here in the upstate, which is very new.
Okay.
And that, through that initiative, got to know a lot of the folks doing work in Bob White Quail, restoration initiatives, and got very interested in it. And especially got, I was just encouraged to see that, hey, this stuff is really working, and I wanted to get involved. And that was a few years ago. And here I am recently on board with Quail Forever biologist here in McCormick or Abbeville County, Abbeville, McCormick, Greenwood, Edgefield. I am a farm bill biologist.
Okay.
So I work primarily with private landowners on writing, management plans that would, increase the quality of their habitat for upland birds in general, especially ground nesting birds.
Okay.
And if possible, we can work with programs, particularly the EQIP program, environmental quality incentives program. I always have to think about that, which does offer some cost share for those types of habitat improvement.
Gotcha.
So yeah, that's what I'm doing here in Abbeville in McCormick.
Nice.
Well, I hear we have some pretty good news for quail people like you, Dad.
Yeah, like me.
What is that good news?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're seeing these quail respond to these habitat initiatives. I would point to some of our quail focal areas here in South Carolina. Is running probably one of the most beautiful ones here in the state down in Indian Creek. We have one down here in McCormick near me, which is the Bordeaux quail focal area. And some of the management initiatives that we're going to discuss moving forward are starting to pay dividends. We are seeing more birds and hearing more birds during these whistle counts and covey counts. And, you know, since, if I recall correctly, I think since about 2017, we've been seeing these quail numbers go up pretty consistently. So our efforts are paying off. And, you know, as dismal as it's been, you know, the past, you know, 20, 30 with respect to quail, hey, you know, this is fixable.
Yeah.
There's a light at the end of this tunnel here.
I, you know, we were talking earlier, and pretty much anybody that listens to the show knows, well, they may not. I grew up bird hunting. You know, we didn't have deer. People out there scratching their head going, do what? No deer. But yeah, I mean, in the 70s, and especially in the upstate, you know, I always had that deer population in the low country, and we stocked deer from the low country into Sumter National Forest in the 50s and 60s, and they spread from there. But, you know, growing up, we had small farming. Lots of overgrown hedgerows and fence rows and all, and we had quail. And when you talked about going bird hunting, it was quail hunting. So I guess I grew up in maybe not the best bird hunting in South Carolina, but I grew up in some pretty dadgum good bird hunting territory and habitat. And, you know, it wasn't always pretty. Hunter, as landowners and all, you like to see those freshly mowed fields and, you know, those nice edges and all, but quail need some ugly stuff to really flourish.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. Quail need weeds, man. well, you know, that's wildlife in general, really throughout the Southeast. I mean, when you think of quail, don't really eat grass.
No.
Quail, but also wildlife in general.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a lot about grass.
Okay.
In this I hope without getting too boring, but grass is important. We're going to talk about some of that. But
okay.
But yeah, bottom line, you're absolutely right. Those wildlife need weeds, what we call weeds. Yeah.
All right, we've got maybe 4 minutes left in this segment, and I think it's a pretty good time to do it. Talk about a bobwhite quail.
Sure. I think, you know, right off the bat, when we think about, you know, what quail need is sort of as we get into, you know, habitat restoration, what that looks like. If you can, you know, distill their needs down to three primary things.
Okay.
Ground to walk around on.
All right.
Imagine being a quail trying to walk through a field of fescue. He's not going to do it.
Not
happening. You or I trying to walk through a, you know, blackberry up to our, you know, up to our chest.
Right.
You know, face. It'd be very different. We would avoid that. Well, there you go. They need some bare ground to walk around on. They need some overhead cover with respect to a quail, which is to us would be low, you know, shin, knee high,
sure.
To you know, allow them to avoid predators.
Right.
I need what we just talked about, those weeds, those herbaceous cover. Those weeds primarily for food.
Okay.
And we'll get into some of those, you know, specifics of some of those species here in just minutes. But those are the three primary needs of a bobwhite quail.
And they're such fragile birds. You know, I think some of the studies said if you jumped a quail, and I forget the specifics, if you flush a quail and it's over 90 degrees, he's got an 80% chance of dying just from heat exhaustion or was something like that. And I'm thinking, what a fragile little animal, little bird.
They really are. But if we give them the habitat they need, you know, we're seeing them respond quickly and positively. So, yeah, you know, that bare ground, that low overhead cover and those seed producing weeds and you know, they can take good care of themselves despite predators.
Yeah, they are. I watched this past year. I watched an owl try to get one in one of my fields, and I plant a mix of it's from Wanamaker seed. It's a DNR quail mix. It's a Egyptian wheat, a WGF sorghum, a buckwheat, and it might be foxtail millet or something like that.
I don't think it was millet.
Doesn't have sesame in it. Maybe it has a little. Anyway, it kind of gets the ground cover all the way up to the 8 foot, and then you get that Egyptian wheat toppling over and all. And that owl was trying to get to those quail.
That's something I've never watched. That's pretty neat.
It was, and I didn't have a camera. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I was deer hunting. I was deer at the time, and you know, the owl was trying to get around the edge, and those Egyptian wheat stalks just got in his way every time. And finally, after about 10 minutes, those birds got up and left. They were like, well, we've done this enough. See ya.
Yeah.
But that was, I've never seen an owl chase quail through a field.
I have to say, I haven't seen that either. Yeah. That's pretty
dadgum cool, which is one of those benefits of being outdoors a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's why we get out there. And that's why you keep a camera with you, by the way, Rod.
Well,
yeah.
And one of the closing lines for the last 9 years has been, don't forget the camera.
You do.
But it's hard. When you're deer hunting, it's hard to negotiate a tree stand and a camera. It was 250 yards away. You'd have never known what it was. But through the binoculars, it looks a real lot closer. Got about a minute left. Just for a second, Quail Forever.
Sure.
Organization.
Quail Forever has been around for a while. We just started our Piedmont chapter less than – gosh, we actually got it off the ground just over a year ago.
Okay.
For the Piedmont region, there is also Quail Forever. The Midlands chapter is pretty new as well. So that's one of the most important things. One of the things I really want to emphasize here. That membership matters, and we'll talk some more about what Quail Forever is doing and impact that they're making, not only for bobwhite quail here in the Southeast, but for pheasants and grouse, in the Northwest and some of our Western states. This is a big organization. I mean, this, and I don't mean to, downgrade any other wildlife organization. A lot of great things there, but with respect to numbers and amount of money and biologists on the ground, Quail Forever / Pheasants Forever. Pheasants Forever is the parent company.
Sure.
They're doing more than anyone else right now.
Cool.
Absolutely a lot of exciting things going on, and I hope we get a chance to talk a little bit more about that. Yeah.
And we will. All right, y'all. First segment down. Y'all hang on a bit. We'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the side to break. Oh, had the volume all the way up on that one. Glad I caught that. This would have blown everybody out.
Yeah, what a...
We like our music here. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We are we're talking about, I don't know, gosh, I mean, you know, Quail Forever and quail habitat. But Hunter, when we talk about habitat, when you manage for quail, specifically manage for quail, you know, a lot of people can do a lot of habitat management for deer or you know, build your brush piles for rabbits or, you know, put your chief plots in for turkeys and stuff like that. But when you manage for bobwhite quail, the habitat they need is the habitat that everything else flourishes in.
That is exactly right. Let's talk a little bit about that habitat, how it's composed, and what exactly these quail are adapted to. I touched on before the break. You know, we talked about those three primary requirements. You know, some bare ground, some overhead ground to kind of walk around on, some low overhead cover, and then seed producing. You know, what we would call weeds.
Okay.
Things like our podium species, like the beggar's lice, the stuff that sticks to your pants when you're walking through the woods.
Huckleberries.
I can't. That's way at the top of the list. They really need that. You know, some of our native Lespedezas and a few of the introduced ones.
Okay.
Ragweed. Ragweed's another really big one. Pokeweed, those sorts of things. Quail really depend on those. And that's not an exhaustive list, but just give you. Yeah. Quail really depend on those things. So if we go back to, you know, sort of your ideal quail habitat, what are they adapted to? It would be that pine oak savanna type habitat. And I think it's a lot of people are under the impression that, you know, when you think of pine savanna, you think of low country, sandy soil below the fall line, your longleaf pine wiregrass ecosystem, and that's a perfectly great example. But Believe it or not, you know, that grassland habitat extended well into Piedmont,
Okay.
from all the way from Virginia down into eastern parts of Texas. You know, this would be obviously prior to European settlement.
Sure.
But so that's what a quail is adapted to. And it's when I say fire dependent, I can't emphasize that enough. I mean, it really, you figure you have tens of thousands of acres of contiguous grassland. One single ignition event, that sucker's not going to stop.
Right.
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 A river or maybe an area that was burned the previous year, which, you know, it didn't have much fuel accumulation. But the point being, this stuff burned consistently. Tree density would have been very low. Now, your trees that didn't make it to the point at which they could withstand fire would, you know, potentially live for hundreds of years.
Sure.
But, you know, think of tree canopies would more or less tree canopies would seldom touch on the upland areas. You know, we're not talking so much down to the bottoms and creek bottoms and draws, but
sure.
On your upland areas, you would have very dense tree canopies. All that sunlight on the forest floor and all of those native bunch grasses. That's another really important thing. This is before fescue, Bermuda, Bahia, these non-native grass species that are, when we think of grass now in the Southeast, I think that's what comes to people's mind.
Sure.
Particularly if you're in the Piedmont, it's fescue.
Fescue. Fescue.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's not native. And that was one of the most devastating blows to ground nesting birds, believe it or not. But just the intrusion of fescue. But at the time we had these bunch grasses, think of, you know, there's the big blue stem, little blue stem, Indian grass, switchgrass, broom sedge is another one. Most people kind of lump those all together under the term blue broom sedge, but
okay.
they're grasses, and they grow. If you think of maybe like if you've done any landscaping, like love grass or pampas grass, sort of how I'm not suggesting plant those for quail. It's just a comparison.
Those sure.
Are not good. But you know, they grow out of one clump and they sort of cascade around themselves. Casting shade right around the clump, discouraging some of that, discouraging germination beneath it. So you have these clumps of grass, and these quail can get around those clumps really, really well.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah.
So that's the importance of your native warm season grasses. You know, and of course that's dependent on enough sunlight hitting the canopy. So the two primary, that's a little bit of a stretch, but two of the primary, hits that the quail have taken, you know, post European settlement would be our forests. As fire was eliminated, the tree canopies had grown up to the point where they're shading out an herbaceous layer, right?
Yeah.
And fescue overtaking those native fescue, Bermuda, Bahia, overtaking all of our open areas from fields, pastures, power lines, gas lines, the sides of roads, all that now is in non-native grasses. And we talked a little bit before about how difficult it is for a quail to get around to that. So as of right now, they don't have a whole lot of habitat left to hang on to, right?
Right.
So what we want to do, I guess, with respect to managing for quail is managing for the habitat. You're not going to release them and bring them back that way, release them and raise them, and try and nip down how many millions of dollars and waste trying to do that.
Oh.
You're just releasing them into bad habitat.
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to open these canopies up, and we want for goodness sake, you know, reintroduce fire. Keep you know, succession, you know, vegetative succession set
right.
back
yep.
so that we're, you know, we're not growing up that dense mid canopy story, which, you know, in most cases would be a dense layer of sweet gums, you know, which would shade out any grass and forbs that would, you know, benefit quail.
Right. You know, you talk about bringing fire back and all. It's always amazing. Even we have pecan trees, and the pecan trees just limb themselves year round. I don't know what it is. I don't see why they're still standing. As many pecan trees limbs as I've picked up in my entire life, I don't see why we still got pecan trees. But but you know, but we tried to keep that clean up underneath there and all. And we had a certain area where we broke those up and piled them up. And we burned them, and it never ceased to amaze me. Just in a burning a clump of pecan tree limbs in the fall or something, what popped up the next spring? You'd have partridge pea. You'd have all sorts of, like, where'd that come from?
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's like a seed bank laying underneath whatever is on top of the ground that you're looking at. And then fire, when fire goes through and takes off that thing, that's, of course, fire sparks germination, mm-hmm. because it, the disturbance and all that. But you got a native seed bank waiting there just to pop up.
Absolutely. So that's a big point to bring up. You know, that that seed bank is absolutely, like you said, it's there waiting to be encouraged. Yeah, it doesn't take much. I've had people, you know, ask me how to reestablish, you know, how much, you know, how hard is it to replant all that? And that can be replanted.
Sure.
There are native grass seeds you can purchase, but as often as not, reintroducing fire to your landscape and some, you know, in some cases, maybe some winter disking or that sort of thing, that, like you said, that seed bank sitting there waiting.
It always amazed me what popped up, and I'm like, ooh, look at that. Ooh, look at that, you know?
Yeah.
And when we started...
The more you appreciate quail habitat, the more you're on your hands and knees, like, looking at this broadleaf stuff coming up. Like, oh, man, this is going to be great. You know, you get excited about it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, a little ragweed plant that's 2 inches tall, you're kind of pumped, you know?
Yeah, look at that. That's cool. Got about two and a half minutes left in the segment. What are, you know, because you do have fire and all that. But mm-hmm. if someone is going to go in and plant quail habitat in 2022, starting into 2023, what are they going to look for? What kind of seeds are they going to look for to plant for specifically for quail habitat?
Sure. Well, right off the bat, I would say, well, I guess the answer to your question would be you can purchase, native warm season grass blends. Okay. But right off the bat, you know, I don't want to discourage that at all, but no, I really don't. But right off the bat, in as many cases as not, or probably more cases than not, just first of all, reintroducing fire.
Okay.
And it, you know, if you can, if you have maybe a field edge, say a big pasture.
Sure.
If you can spray some of that fescue out, disk that up, and it may take two applications of herbicide, but, you know, kill some of that, and keep that disked up, you'll have those native grasses pop back up. If not, again, you can look into purchasing some of those native seed blends. But again, I want to emphasize the point that you made. A lot of this stuff is in our seed bank right now. So, you know, your some of those big blue stem, little blue stem, Indian grass, brushy blue stem, those sorts of things, they're gonna come up naturally in most cases.
Nice, because I know that seed is expensive.
That's kind of what I was trying to say. That's exactly right.
Burning per acre is cheaper than trying to seed per acre.
Right. You went there, I didn't, but you're right.
I mean, I was you look at, because I like to look at the pollinator seed, and I like to look at the old hedgerow seed where you get some wild plum and you get some, you know, blackthorn and stuff like that.
Plum, great
oh yeah cover. But goodness gracious alive, this cost of getting all that back is like, oh.
I just really want to be more encouraging that in most cases, or in a lot of cases, you don't have to go buy that seed.
Yeah.
And you can bring it back from the native seed bank. And as long as you're, you know, introducing fire every 2 years or so, depending on your site,
that's right.
Not a, you know, just to say every 2 years, managing, and in some places managing through disking. We'll talk about maybe in the next segment or so.
Yeah.
I think we're running time here.
Yeah.
Disking. Mowing, big difference. So that's maybe something we'll come to in the next segment. But yeah, these native forbs and native grasses can absolutely be encouraged.
Cool. Not everything's about money, folks. Sometimes just about a little bit of time and maybe some fire. And fire is fun, as long as you control
fire
it.
Fire is a ton of fun.
Fire. All right, y'all, hang on. We're gonna be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break. I'll let you do this one, Taylor. I think we know him
How
enough.
How about no?
Huh?
I know I'm going to lose, so.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I do.
Got a baby girl sleeping in my bedroom.
Okay.
And her mama laughing in.
All right, Hunter, don't say it.
The sound of
don't say it out loud, but do you know who this is? I don't really know how I got here. Yeah. But I'm so okay. That all right.
So,
see, he's got a name in his. What a,
I know who he is.
Okay.
I know the band he used to sing for.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, so just hang on to that right there.
So.
That's a great song.
Okay.
But it didn't
I
make.
Just speak.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. Anyway.
I think we know him well enough to do this.
So. You have kind of like who it is in your head, right? Okay. So
yeah, I know who it is. I'm trying to think of the name. Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
So to you,
you have to put yourself into a position of who this is in music now. So go ahead, mm-hmm. Taylor.
To you, is that always going to be Hootie and the Blowfish to you, or is that going to be Darius Rucker?
Always Hootie and the Blowfish.
God, yes! Dang, no!
And listen, the guy is awesome. Please, this is not a knock on him. I love his music.
Oh, yeah.
But he is Hootie and the Blowfish. I'm sorry.
See?
Oh!
I love it.
Dang it. I think we're tied now.
Oh, who knows? We've been doing this for like 4 years. I have never kept track of this.
We start keeping like a scoreboard.
I
couldn't think of the. You know why I couldn't think of the name? Because he's always Hootie the Blowfish.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So there. Yep. That's why.
Okay.
I lost
right.
that one.
You lost that one. Take it like a champ.
I'm trying.
gosh, we have had a ball this show. Hope you have. We did during the break. We were talking, and Hunter has been in another life, and maybe in this life, a professional photographer, outdoor photography. So we are gonna schedule a photography show. Not that he's gonna give away trade secrets, but he's just gonna teach you how to take a better picture.
I'll give away every trade secret I have.
Oh gosh. Well, that was easy.
I was about to say.
But yeah, folks. So yeah, look forward to that one. We'll make sure to give you some heads up on that. And you hack photogs like me out there, we can see how bad we really are. But anyway, back to Quail and Quail Management. We hit on this just at the end of the last segment. Control burns, wintertime disking, and all. Got a lot of landowners out there. They're going, okay, I know fire is good. I've heard about disking maybe a little bit, but how often do I want to burn? I've got a 25-acre patch of pine trees, or I've got a 10-acre field that's full of broom straw and whatever else, and I want to burn it, but do I burn it and just let it go 5 years? Or what kind of schedule do you want to get on with those kind of control burns?
Sure. I want to be careful in advising here because it is going to depend very much on basically your soil productivity.
Okay.
This is the way to put it. On a low productivity site, which, you know, something like that, you might get away with burning it, you know, every 3 years or something like that. On a high productivity site, it might need to be every year or every other year.
Okay.
I think more often than not on most sites for quail, we're looking at every other year.
Okay. All right.
Again, I want to be careful there. Like don't just take that and think, okay, you know, that's the rule of thumb. We're always going to do that. So, one to three years, when you start getting to 5-6 years, you're going to hurt yourself because that's when those sweet gums and maples have had, you know, 4 to 5 years to regenerate. And by that point, they're big enough around that, you know, a fire is not going to kill them anymore. And the whole point of fire is to maintain that early successional herbaceous layer. So if you're waiting too long between burns, it's about as bad as not burning at all. Right.
And the guy that's going to help you determine that, whether you've got a productive soil bed or a non-productive soil bed, is some of the biologists. You mentioned a forum in the state. You've got some programs. And also,
a farm bill biologist.
Yeah.
And there are four of us here in South Carolina. And if you want to find the one closest to you, you can just go to quailforever.org. How did I do this? I just Googled a minute ago, quail. Ever farm bill biologist, and it popped right up.
Okay.
So you'll find the one closest to you in your area.
All right. And that's where again?
That's quailforever.org/habitat, and it'll take you right there. Or again, just Google. Sometimes it's hard to remember URLs like that.
If you
just Google Quail Forever farm bill biologist South Carolina, It'll put you there, and you'll go down, I'm looking at it right now, you enter your zip code,
okay,
and a name will pop up.
Okay, all right. And that's dependent on where you are in the state.
That's right. And those services, by the way, are free. There's zero cost to having myself or someone else, you know, one of my coworkers come out, depending on where in the state you are, to come out and look at your property and discuss what kind of options might be available.
And we want to stay away from, okay, if you do this, you're going to get this much in federal funding, whatever that. Explain the EQIP program and how people go about getting one of you guys to come out and look, form a plan, and then see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So the EQIP program, it's part of a much larger piece of legislation that does offer landowners some financial assistance for, let's say hypothetically converting, you know, some of your pasture. You have a big field of pasture where you're harvesting, hay.
Hey. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so you make a line, you know, around the edge of that pasture, maybe, you know, 20 or 30 yards wide that you're going to convert to native, a hedgerow is what I was trying to say, to native grasses, let's say. You know, there could be, some cost share incentives associated with that for reestablishing warm season grasses. There could be cost share opportunities out there for, you know, say you thin your pines down to a basal area or a density that would be consistent with, you know, upland, promoting upland bird habitat. There could be cost share opportunities there. So,
okay.
Again, I want to be careful about promising, say, hey, you
sure.
do this amount of money, but
sure.
There are funds out there. And part of my job and the job of people like me is to sort of accelerate the enrollment in that program and help you sort of navigate that, the pitfalls of the, or not really pitfalls, but sort of navigate the farm bill.
Sure.
Yeah.
What, you know, you mentioned something there, basal area. What is a basal area for quail for upland game? What is it? I think I'm at 30. Am I at 30 right now?
30. That's really low, and I'm not. It's not too low for quail, but that's 30 is like a field with a couple trees in it.
Well, and maybe so, I'm not at 30. It might be at 40 then. I know we've done a first thin, a second thin, and then this would generally be the one you go to saw timber, but saw timber's not in great demand, and we're kind of caught
right.
in that
other kinda, consideration.
Yeah, and gosh, it's just so pretty, you know.
Well, 60, I think 60 and below is really better for, you know, that 50, 60 range is great.
Okay.
60, you know, getting at 70 and a 70 is really the point where you're really pushing it, but that can be some good quail habitat.
Yeah.
But I guess it's hard to really quantify that, you know.
Sorry about that.
I say bottom. Like, I guess I'm going to say 65, 50 to 65 is kind of the best.
Okay. All right.
Really speaking, but that doesn't mean you can't do anything, you know, above or below that by
yeah.
any means. Below that, you can still be in really good shape.
Yeah. Okay. Well, back to the EQIP program and all that. Anything else there we need to talk about? Anything you want to fill in?
No, I think, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, there are cost share opportunities out there. There is federal funding out there. And, you know, if you're interested in this kind of thing, you know, go to just Google Quail Forever,
okay.
A farm bill biologist, or quailforever.org/habitat/find a biologist.
Gotcha.
Or again, the easy way, the way I do it would be just Quail Forever, Farm Bill Biologist, hit enter.
And Google will do the rest.
Right.
I gotcha. And it's gotta be, I mean, I'm sure it's very rewarding to get a call from somebody and watch a piece of property transition from fescue to, you know, maybe a mix of fescue. It's still got some hay fields there to work with, but
yeah.
they got that edge, and then quail need that edge.
Absolutely. And the most rewarding thing is to see these efforts work, because that's the important thing. They work, and we're seeing dividends. We're seeing results where we're starting to restore habitat, even not exactly to, you know, your perfect tree density, your perfect vegetative composition, or even if it's not quite perfect, we are seeing these quail respond quickly and favorably. So it's not a pie in the sky initiative. This stuff is working, and
gotcha.
It's exciting.
Gotcha. Well, folks, we've had a good time. I hope Hunter, you're big. We need to do the thing, but we also need to talk about the, see if I can get it here. Here we go, folks. If you're a bird hunter, oh, come on, whistle. Whistle.
Just wait.
There we go.
Oh, there we go. I love it.
And it's amazing. You can tell somebody who is bird hunting because that sound will stop them in their tracks.
Stop you in your tracks.
No, we've had a great time. Quail Forever is if you're interested in getting involved, are there two or three chapters in South Carolina now?
There are, gosh, you know,
Low Country, Midlands.
I know there's three.
Okay, and Piedmont then.
Maybe a fourth, and I'm going to get yelled at if I get that wrong. So
that's all right.
Somewhere in there. Yeah.
I think there's three now. You know, you can go to Quail Forever, get involved.
Go to scquailforever.org.
There you go. That
would be the best place to go. scquailforever.org.
Yep.
No. There's not a dot, not a dash between SC. Just scquailforever.org. Okay. And that's huge. I can't emphasize enough the importance of that membership.
Yeah.
It goes a long way. And again, I mean, Quail Forever, our parent organization is Pheasants Forever. This is not a small initiative. This is a major initiative. I mean, comparable. They have more biologists on the ground than any other non-governmental organization out there. Period.
Cool.
So this is not a small, organization. A lot of big things going on. A lot of great work going on, and it's especially satisfying to see it really trickle down into the Southeast to bring our quail back, and it's working.
Cool. We have enjoyed it, Hunter. Thank you very much for taking some time to be with us, folks. You've heard about
it.
We'll have him back on, but you've heard how to get involved and a lot of things you can do to take advantage of restoring some quail. It does for all. So anyway, as always, thanks for being here. Make time to get outside.
Take the back roads when you can.
And, don't be like me. Don't forget the camera.
Back roads, I love it.
Yeah, don't forget the camera. Y'all hang on. Back next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Gone.